This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9.
Joy. This is Well on Joy 94.9, brought to you every Monday evening at 8 p.m, presented by the Victorian AIDS Council. My name's Jessie, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, John, today. Every week, we tackle all things sex, sexual health, and the overall health and well-being of our GLBTI communities. John, lovely having you on the show with me again tonight. How are you?
I'm a little tired, but I'm doing fairly well otherwise.
Good. Do tell our lovely listeners what we have in store for them tonight.
I'm actually pretty excited because it's going to make my work over the next few weeks a lot easier. We have a special guest, Mala from DanceWise, Harm Reduction Victoria, to join us in the discussion about harm reduction, specifically as it involves clubs and festivals and all those things that we've been hearing a lot about, as well as to give our listeners a simple drug education around dangerous drug interactions, what harm reduction is, and also to get some tips about how to party safe, to take care of yourself and your friends.
Exactly. So putting aside for that, please stay tuned over the next hour. And just a little plug in other news. Last week was the online launch of the Belonging Project, which was a digital storytelling project exploring meth use amongst gay, bisexual and queer men. So Belonging for It will stimulate and challenge viewers to reflect on the meaning of connection and intimacy and their relationship to sex and drug use, as well as encourage conversation on taking care of ourselves and each other. So if you guys missed the actual exhibition that was held a couple weeks ago, please jump onto Touchbase and check out the story section for the stories freshly uploaded. We would love it for all our listeners to get involved in the conversation. John, do tell them how they could get in touch or send questions into the studio.
Absolutely. If you have anything you'd like to contribute to the program or any question to ask me, Jesse, or Mola, please just get in contact with us on SMS at 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. Up next, we'll be joined by Mola from DanceWise. This is Joy 94.9.
Joy. This is Well on Joy 94.9, and I'm here today with my co-host, John, and we are joined by our special guest, Mala from DanceWise. Mala, how are you today?
Hi, thanks. I'm great.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show to us. Do you want to start off with telling us a bit about yourself and your role at DanceWise?
Sure. So my name is Mala. I'm a registered nurse from the Netherlands with experience in clinical psychiatrics, first aid at events, drug education, drug testing, and I'm currently working for DanceWise as a training.
So you're pretty
and
highly
education.
Qualified then.
I have experience.
Yeah.
So my role is to increase knowledge about alcohol and other drugs among people who use drugs, but also people who work at events, first responders, etc.
Great. So do you do the training for the first responders?
I translated accredited training from the Netherlands called Drug-Related First Aid, so I do that here a lot at events.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Cool. That's fantastic.
So with DanceWise, what sort of events do you participate in and help out with? Are we talking like at clubs, or is it just festivals? Or give us an example.
Primarily big dance events and festivals. Okay. It could be in central area in Melbourne, but it could also be a more rural area, multi-day events.
Okay.
Really depends. Sometimes it's one day, sometimes more days.
Yeah, so specifically, I know that we work together doing the Trofex party. I'm sure a lot of the listeners know that one. Know and love that party at Club 80.
I don't know what
And I think
mean.
You guys have a presence at things like Rainbow Serpent and Strawberry Fields and like all those kinds of festivals and stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
What sort of work do you do when you're at these festivals?
Well, DanceWise is one of the outreach programs of Harm Reduction Victoria. Okay. So Harm Reduction Victoria is actually the organization, and we're a community-based and governed not-for-profit organization. And our goal is to educate and inform, support, and advocate. So we're funded by the Victorian Department of Health and Human Services. And DanceWise is one of the outreach programs. So we host chill out spaces at events or at clubs. We provide resource, free health supplies such as free condoms, earplugs.
Oh, earplugs as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I do remember walking past the DanceWise tent when I was at Strawberry. And I popped my little head in and said hello, but, you know, we'll get back there soon, maybe.
Yeah,
trying to persuade them.
So tonight we're talking about harm reduction just broadly, but I think as specific as that term is, it actually encompasses quite a few things and can be quite vague to people who aren't familiar with it. Can you give us a brief explanation of what harm reduction is?
Yeah, of course. So harm reduction is part of Australia's national drug strategy, which has a harm minimization approach. So the terms harm minimization and harm reduction are often confused, but these are two different things. So a harm minimization is a three strategy approach to drug policy, and it has three pillars. And one pillar is supply reduction, so that means law enforcement and border protection.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The second pillar is demand reduction, which is treatment, health promotion campaigns, such as anti-smoking, treatment for addiction or dependency, sorry.
Okay.
And the last pillar is harm reduction, so that is a pragmatic, non-judgmental health intervention like needle and syringe programs and DanceWise with our chill space.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And so I think this harm reduction approach is quite a, I guess you could say, generally new kind of concept, because we know that demand and supply reduction is a big thing in, you know, especially Asian countries, and it hasn't quite worked so well on its own in silo, which is why they've brought in these other strategies to kind of really deal with the issue in a better way.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me coming at this from the US. I've only been in Australia 6 years, and to see just how actually pragmatic and forward thinking these programs are in Australia, because they are, some places in the US have them, but to see just how progressive it is here, and then I understand that compared to the Netherlands, Australia is actually quite regressive when it comes to these sorts of things. So it's, I'm excited we get to explore that today.
Exactly. So the more evidence approach we have, the better, right?
Yeah.
We're moving towards that direction.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. I am John, co-hosting the show with Jesse tonight, and we're joined by Mala from DanceWise. Before we get back to our conversation, we've had a lovely little text message from a listener.
Ooh, do tell.
Brad from Marvelous Melbourne, and it is marvelous, says to us, "Hi, Moldylocks, aka Jesse and John."
What?
So, I don't know. I'm assuming this is a friend of yours. Jesse, tell Craig he has to give you a big hug from me when you see him next at work. So, Craig, if you're listening, you can anticipate a hug from Jesse tomorrow.
I better get that hug, Craig. But thank you, Brad. Appreciate it.
Well, continuing our conversation that we started, in the first segment, we were talking about harm reduction from drug use and how it's kind of a difficult thing depending on the community, where you were to contrast Australia with the Netherlands, with the United States, that every place is going to have a different attitude and have different approaches. So, Mala, in Australia, in the work that you do, what tends to be the predominant attitude of the community?
From the community, very positive. I think people who access our services are generally really thankful, and they also acknowledge the importance of our work.
Yeah.
I think if you look at the general population, often there's a bit of confusion because people might think we're promoting drug use, but that's absolutely not true. So we don't promote, condone, or judge drug use. We just provide information and have a pragmatic approach to decrease risks.
So
I think people who have that attitude, which are first in nation, are a bit negative or don't really know what it is. It's often also because they don't fully understand what drug use is or why people use drugs.
Yeah.
And further in the conversation, it's better.
They
really change their perspective.
Totally. Yeah. And I would think also maybe people who are outside of the, like, let's say the peer kind of model, or if they're looking from the outside, they don't quite understand the need, or, you know, it does seem like if they don't understand, if they don't use it, it might look like drug promotion because you talk about it in such a way that's accepting but also non-judgmental.
Yeah, and I also think that people often forget that drugs, nicotine, or nicotine, alcohol, and are just as much drugs as any other drugs. They
just
all have their own risks. It's just socially accepted, so that's a different approach.
And I guess the way you look at it is at festivals or at parties, people are going to use drugs anyway. it's probably better to educate them how to use them safely.
Absolutely.
Which is pretty much why you're here, right?
Absolutely.
Though it does seem to be a bit of a difficult thing to, not necessarily to comprehend, but for people to get over. It's a difficult issue. It's a very emotive issue. People have strong reactions to this, some from personal experience, some just because they think drugs are bad, we must not do drugs. Mm. So to wrap one's mind around the concept of, all right, drug use is going to happen, whether we like it or not, and you might not like it, but what can we do to make sure that, you know, people who are using drugs aren't overdosing and dying, aren't going to the emergency room, aren't contracting bloodborne viruses, you know, aren't having all these sorts of harms associated with it.
But yeah, absolutely.
It does seem to require a great deal of, I'm going to say, emotional maturity to accept that drug use is going to happen.
Yep.
And we just need to work to help those people. So
absolutely. So in some of the work that you've done, or maybe that heard anecdotally from your workmates, what are some of the common situations or cases that you've observed?
I think most common cases are have to do with poly drug use, so people combining multiple drugs together. And yeah, after this, alcohol is definitely the most prevalent. We see
that. Isn't that
the
funny? Because alcohol is the most promoted legal one,
and also most widely used.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and after that, it's MDMA and LSD that can cause health issues.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, where does your duty of care actually end? Because I know you guys do the education part, inform people so they've got as much information, provide water and hydrolyte sometimes and condoms. When do you decide that it needs to go a step further?
Well, we work very closely with the medical providers at events. So we have a chill out space, which means that we do provide care for people who need care. Mm-hmm. But when it becomes a medical situation and we have protocols in place to assess that, we also have help from medical providers, or they get transferred to the medical post. So we work very closely.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. No, it's been in the news quite a bit lately. It hasn't been characterized as overdoses, but things at, I believe there was a concert at the Meyer Music Bowl last week, and several people overdosed or had a bad batch of GHB. And then a couple months ago, there were some people who on Chapel Street who went out and had a bad batch of MDMA. What are your thoughts around the community response, and what should have maybe been done in those situations?
Well, it's a difficult discussion, I think. Well, first of all, like looking at Chapel Street, there were 20 transports from St. Kilda or neighboring areas that night.
Mm.
And five transports were from one specific club.
Do you mean like ambulance?
Yeah, ambulance transports to hospital.
Oh, wow.
Indeed.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and there were in that weekend, there were 3 deaths.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult because you don't have any drug testing in place. You often don't know what is actually causing it. Are we talking about one batch? What is that drug?
Mm-hmm.
So there has been some testing done, and apparently there were capsules found and sold which contained a brown coarse granular material. Mm-hmm. And that contained 4-fluoroamphetamine and 25-C-MBOME with MDMA. And more recent, a couple of days ago, there was a warning came out for similar capsules without the MDMA, also 4-fluoroamphetamine and 25-C-MBOME.
So just those particular compounds that you're talking about, so are they a derivative of MDMA, and no, do they have completely different, or are they just completely different?
These are different substances. Yeah,
yeah.
So these were initially sold as MDMA, but the last capsules didn't contain any MDMA at all.
Yeah.
So what you buy here in Australia is sometimes not what you intend to buy, is not actually what you want to take.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the dangerous part. If people aren't informed about what they're consuming, that is already the first step of them unable to take care of themselves, yet alone taking a substance that we don't know what does to you. I mean, from what I've heard, you know, there's been like hallucinations and people are kind of going like a bit of psychosis or something, but like there's so many different stories here and there, and people are almost too scared to talk about it though, isn't it? Because
it's a heavily stigmatized subject.
Absolutely. Stigmatization is very it's widely
it's dangerous.
They won't get the help that they need because they're scared. I know a lot of people will not, they won't go to hospitals or emergency rooms even if they're having a bad trip or overdose, because they think they'll be criminally liable. They think they'll be arrested as soon as they show up, and that's
but that is not the case.
No, it's not the case. Fortunately, the law here, it's against the law to possess drugs. It's against the law to traffic drugs. But, and I might have to qualify this because I haven't looked 100% into it, I do not believe it's against the law to actually have them in your system. In some places it is. If you present at a hospital and they find, all right, you have this amount of heroin in your bloodstream, they could arrest you. In Victoria, I don't believe that's the case.
Yeah, you can go to a hospital, A&E, get treated, and they're not allowed to call the cops on you per se.
No,
if you are
only if there is severe aggression and for their own safety, but generally if you ask for help there won't be any police involved.
Exactly. Speaking of the police, what is DanceWise's relationship like? Do you guys work together, and what are some of the main challenges, if there are any, dealing with them?
Well, the police's job is to carry out the law, and however the law obviously doesn't treat drug use very well. So health issues are now often treated as criminal issues. And this is problematic, as already said, because it prevents people from accessing the care that they need or treatment facilities that they need. So in terms of contact with the police, I can only speak from my observation. And it's very different every time. Like, I've met very great, helpful officers, and at festivals they really had a caring role and supportive role. I've also heard about stories where people felt kind of intimidated by them, and they weren't completely aware of what their rights were and such. So that lead up to, unpleasant experiences.
Yeah, I think that kind of opens the conversation of that we need all kinds of training, isn't it? Not just in the healthcare sector, but, you know, in the public health sector and the police sector, and just need to kind of work together with all of this, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be a struggle to get everybody on the same page, I think.
Slowly. Joy 94.9. This is Well, and you're on Joy 94.9.
Something like that.
You know, say it so many times, you tend to forget. I have a question from the lovely Jono. So Jono is throwing the barber parties, and I think they are throwing a Sydney version. And I think this is a question for you, Marla. Is there a version of DanceWise in Sydney? Because they have hired two paramedics, but it would be great for them to have posters or merchandise or information about harm reduction. Is there anyone they could contact, or what would you advise?
At the moment, there is no DanceWise equivalent in Sydney yet. It is under construction. Hopefully, it will happen.
That is so flabbergasting.
Yeah. Well, we're funded by the Victorian government.
Yeah.
So that's why we're restricted to the Victorian area.
Yeah, definitely.
But if they flick me an email, which is to mala@dancewise.org.au, so mala@dancewise.org.au, I'm happy to send any flyers, resources that we can provide for you to print and dispatch that on your event.
You hear that, Jono? So you can get them from Mala and bring them up to Sydney. Good stuff. So I just wanted to get a quick snapshot of the drug use amongst GLBTI community in Melbourne. Are you able to kind of let us know what that looks like?
Yeah, I think, like, looking at drug use in general, I don't think that the risks that the LGBTI community is exposed to are very much different to other communities, but you do see a higher prevalence. So people from the community are more likely to use drugs. So with that being said, sometimes people talk about sex parties and such, but that actually only goes about like a small percentage of the community, and mostly men. So I would say generally the same things apply to all the rest of the population, basically.
The same risks apply, but I feel like, you know, for someone who for myself personally, who straddles both worlds of like working with the GLBTI community as well as being involved in the heterosexual community, whether you're out at parties and stuff, I do feel that the GLBTI community have amazing, amazing drug education around harm reduction and even, you know, sexual health education and stuff. So maybe because it is higher amongst that community, but definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting because there are a bunch of studies that look at this, and I noticed you have the Private Life study that was done out of La Trobe University, and that looks at mental health, but also just health and drug use in the gay community. But then we also have the periodic surveys, which we'll be getting the results from the most recent one soon. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's interesting to see that LGBTI people have significantly higher rates of substance use than the general population. But some studies have suggested that the harm that happens from drug use, so things like overdoses, happen significantly less in
because
the LGBTI.
Because they're more educated.
Yes, there are certain clusters of communities that have come up. They know how to do these things. Mm. They provide like essentially peer education to one another. So
that's
when
why we have drugs,
them,
hey?
Yeah, thank God. but no, it's interesting to see that. It's also interesting to see how it coincides with, or some people think it coincides with, the frequency of mental health problems or issues. So obviously gay people, LGBTI people have higher rates of anxiety and depression. And people think, well, maybe they're using the drugs to treat, you know, self-medicate.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, though, isn't it?
It's a bit of a leap to make for that one.
But, yeah, but we want to do a little bit of drug education for our listeners out there. So something that is used quite commonly in the gay community or GLBTI community would be GHB, GABA hydroxybutyrate. Mm-hmm. And can you just give us an overview? What is it? How does it work on the body?
Of course. So I think to answer that question, it's good to have a bit of an understanding of what types of drugs there are. Mm-hmm. So generally, there are three main types of drugs when categorized on the effect on the central nerve system. So those are stimulants, depressants, and psychedelics. So stimulants have a stimulating effect on the central nerve system, making the body and mind more active. Depressants.
Do you want to maybe go through just a couple examples of
stimulants? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Stimulants could be methamphetamine, ice, cocaine, caffeine, nicotine. Those are all stimulants. Mm-hmm. MDMA is also a stimulant, but is also a psychedelic. So depressants are the opposite of stimulants. They don't make you depressed, but they have a depressant effect on the central nerve system. So they make the body and mind more relaxed. So GHB is, for instance, a depressant. Alcohol is a depressant. Ketamine is a depressant. And psychedelics have an altering effect on the central nerve system. And that causes changes in perception of reality and also in thinking. So some drugs fit in multiple categories. A GHB is definitely a depressant drug. It can cause relaxation, euphoria, but also loss of consciousness. And that can cause people to get a respiratory depression. Oh. Yeah, and the dose that people take to have the desired effects is very close to a dose that people lose consciousness, which is called an overdose.
Yeah, which is why GHB is one of those drugs that you have to be really careful with, because you take just that little bit more and it can actually have very severe adverse effects on your body.
Yeah.
Can't it? Yeah.
Indeed. And there's also another factor involved, which is that GHB is not always available here. So often substances like 1,4-B and GBL are sold as GHB. And specifically GBL is, they're both converted into the body when absorbed into GHB, so the effects are exactly the same. But for GBL, it counts that it's absorbed in a higher rate than GHB, so you need less to reach the same effects, and that also increases the chance of overdose.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we did actually come across a kind of some of that when there was some that had come down from Sydney to some of the parties here, and we were seeing a lot of overdoses on G because people were taking what they thought was
GHB.
GHB, but it was another compound, or probably, was it GLB?
GBL.
GBL, of course, So it's a tough one, but you guys do provide measuring, what do you call them?
Barrels
or measuring barrels,
or syringes.
Yes.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, no, it's very important to be precise about your dose, dose in terms of amount of milliliters that you take. Well, I mean, drugs are never without risk. I don't think it's realistic to think that you can eliminate all risks. So even mentioning of doses can always be quite tricky.
Yeah.
And the strength of fluids can diverse so greatly. Like some are very weak, some are very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's very important to test for yourself how strong your GHB is by taking a little bit.
Yeah.
Measure very precisely. Write down what time you took and how much you took. Tell to friends. Never combine with other depressant drugs such as alcohol or ketamine.
Yeah, they always have a really big warning about that. Do not drink alcohol or have ketamine while in your GHB. Can you explain to us why that is?
Yeah, it's like they work both work on similar neurotransmitters in the brain, and it basically. Basically becomes like 1 + 1 = 3, so it doesn't just top up, it like really enhances each other. So losing consciousness with GHB and alcohol is very common. And losing consciousness just is very risky.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a bit frightening. You see that happening quite a bit at parties, and I know in places like the UK it's where we talk about ice being a big problem here, which it's debatable. In the UK it's GBL. Because people aren't taking it properly. They're combining it with alcohol. They're combining it with other drugs. And you're seeing not just overdoses. You're seeing deaths.
Yeah.
And really, unfortunately, destructive things that don't need to happen.
Yeah.
In my experience, I do feel like, well, within Melbourne, at the parties we've attended or worked at, that seems to be quite common knowledge, though, that you do not mix alcohol with GHB. I wonder why that's different over there. They seem to be...
I think it might be that inheritance of knowledge and that learning, because even in Melbourne it's pockets of knowledge, so it's do have quite a distinct community sitting around, say, Barba Party, Trofex, those sorts of parties, and it's more or less the same crowd, and they more or less know one another, and they can talk to each other and educate each other. Whereas if you were to go to, say, this thing at the Meyer Music Bowl that happened, we don't quite know yet what caused that, but it suggested not only was it maybe a dodgy batch, maybe it was GBL, but people were combining with alcohol, people were dosing improperly, because they come from a background that didn't have that community education. They
didn't
weren't aware of how to do it responsibly and safely, which is a bit, it's just a shame.
It is.
So last thing I want to mention about it, if you do choose to take GHB and you test your first strength, always wait 2 hours before you take more, and don't take more than half of your initial dose when you take a second time to prevent dose risk.
That's good to remember.
Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm John with Jesse, joined by Mala, and continuing our conversation around harm reduction and drug use. We were just talking about responsible dosing of drugs at parties and how to ensure that you're using quality. If you're using drugs, that you're using quality drugs. But I actually had a question before we moved on about pill testing, because it's been a bit talked about in the news lately. And there seems to be a significant resistance from most parts of government. I mean, the Greens are on board because they're the Greens, but Labour and the Liberal Party seem to be like, oh, we don't want to do that. Why do you think that is? And also, what would be the benefits of having pill testing and substance testing available at these festivals?
Well, what are the barriers? Basically, political unwillingness. It's often still a very moral discussion. People have the argument people can choose to not use drugs, and that's their leading thing, but that kind of neglects reality, in my opinion. Often also lack of education on the subject, stigmatization, and therefore distancing from the subject, don't want to be associated with it. Fear of approving drug use. Law-based approach at the moment. It's a criminal issue instead of a health issue.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but we're getting there slowly. So it's looking, you know, not too bad. So I wonder if, like, if we had pill testing, whether, you know, we would actually reduce some of the harms that's been happening later. Oh, I do wonder. We were doing a little quick drug education. I just wanted to jump back to injecting drug use, because we did talk about GHB and some of those harmful interactions. So with regards to injecting drug use, such as meth, what are the main risks involved, and what precautions can be taken to reduce the harms?
Yeah. So if you inject drugs, you take away all natural barriers that your body has in place to protect itself, because you're creating a direct passage to your bloodstream. How can you minimize these risks? By applying safer injecting practices. So that includes, make sure you wash your hands, use sterile injecting equipment. Don't share any of your equipment. Work as sterile as possible. Then you have more the practical on how you inject.
Of course. Yeah, and we do a lot of work with that in terms of reducing any possible HIV transmissions, and we do have a needle syringe program.
Yeah, based at all vax sites, I believe.
Yeah.
But actually something that's just been done, which I was kind of surprised when VAC did it, to be quite honest, but it's a safe injecting video. It's animated, so hopefully not triggering.
Yeah.
But it actually walks people through. It's like, all right, if you're going to inject drugs, these are just the steps you need to take, just as you articulated, like, you know, bevel up, use a clean needle, don't share, do all these different things.
Yeah.
Because it's like, all right, maybe you are struggling with substance use and maybe you want to quit or you want to reduce or something like that. But at the very least, make sure you don't get HIV. Make sure you don't get hepatitis, all manner of things.
And there's also people perfectly happy with injecting their drugs and, you know, like cognitive liberty could be a right.
Absolutely.
Best to be educated, isn't it? So last one that we wanted to... Oh, it's not really the last one, but we wanted to talk about another quite a dangerous drug interaction, and that was amyl nitrite, or what people call here as rush or poppers.
I've just heard it called amyl, but that's
amyl,
me.
Yeah, exactly. And so amyl and Viagra are a very dangerous combination.
Mm.
And sometimes, you know, if especially when it comes to sex parties, something, you know, guys might be taking Viagra, and, you know, amyl can also be quite common on the dance floor or just whatever. Why is this such a dangerous combination?
They both cause vasodilation. So that means that your veins relax and get wider, or your blood vessels, and that causes a drop in blood pressure. So combining them together can create a too big of a drop, and that can cause your circulation to stop. So it's best not to combine those two.
So pretty much giving you a heart attack?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Do you see that much at all?
Well, I'm quite new in Australia, so I'm not sure.
Of course. And that's one of those things that are actually really hard, because, you know, the Viagra might not... Viagra is technically illegal. It is a legal substance, so people might not think about being educated in that area of those kind of drug interactions.
I think in general, just drug combinations, people should be very cautious with it and really do their research.
Definitely.
Yeah, and actually we have, fortunately, there's a really good resource for that. It's the TouchBase website. We probably, you know, harp on about this all the time because we're VAC. but touchbase.org.au has a lot of information about drug interactions, including things like, you know, amyl and Viagra. And then you also get, I think, the safe injecting videos now up there, the one I mentioned.
So it's got a lot of really good information.
How do I put this? I know some people who have gone to things like Trough, and when they might have been using substances, they just wanted to make sure everything was okay. So they just pull out their phone in the corner. You know, some people might do this.
Amazing.
And just like they check, they're like, all right, cool, I'm safe to do this.
That's fantastic.
I'm not going to disclose these people's identities.
But, you know, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's, prevents us from hopefully having heart attacks on the dance floor, G-drops, things like that.
That's good news, though.
But I'm interested because I think we kind of highlighted this earlier. We're talking about a lot of the approach in Australia, but you've just come from the Netherlands, and the Netherlands is considered quite a forward-thinking, a progressive country when it comes to not only harm reduction, but attitudes towards drugs. So as far as harm reduction approaches in the Netherlands, what do those look like, and how do they contrast with Australia's?
Well, I can tell you maybe something about our test service.
Cool.
So is this a pill testing service?
Yeah, this is pill testing service. Mm-hmm. So that's a good example, I think. Like in the end of the 80s, we had the rave culture and changing user groups. People started using different drugs instead of opioids. They started using synthetics like MDMA. Mm. So the risk changed, and policies in the early 90s were really characterized by lack of knowledge about this about these risks.
Mm.
So we installed pill testing. So in 1987, we started doing pill testing on dance floors.
Wow.
And in 1992, we had a start of DIMS, D-I-M-S, which is in an office setting doing pill testing or substance testing in general.
How progressive.
Yeah, it's remarkable that we have to fight for that here.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And same as well with other initiatives are clean... our legal injecting rooms, so user rooms, heroin programs, methadone programs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you make a comment about, so obviously the harm reduction approach is different. It's a lot more accepted. You guys have started this in 1987, which was before I was born, which is amazing. Yeah.
God, I'm old.
But like, what are some of the main differences that you noticed? Are there less overdoses? Are people just a lot more clued on? Do they take drugs in a different manner compared to Australia? Have you got any anecdotal kind of comment to make about it?
If you look at statistical numbers, the general use is a lot lower than Australia. So less people take drugs in the Netherlands than in Australia.
Nice.
Also, less incidents. I sorted this out. I thought 10 times less people dying from overdoses in the Netherlands.
Wow, hear that.
And also
10 times less people.
If there's a dangerous substance circulating on the market, we clue on to that, and we promote. We have campaigns running through the country or local campaigns saying, "Oh, this specific drug is dangerous, and people don't take it." So we have people dying from the same batch of pills they die in England, and we have zero deaths in the Netherlands. So there's just this build-up of information and evidence that the harm reduction approaches are really working. You see it as well in other countries.
Yeah. It's really working.
Well, I mean, Sydney has a safe injecting facility in King's Cross, and I think it's 10 years of operation now. They've had thousands and thousands of people come in and use it. And yes, they've had overdoses, but they have medical staff on site to help prevent those people from dying. And nobody in 10 years has died from an overdose there. Yeah. They've linked people into treatment and care. They've linked people to harm reduction resources. It's incredible. And now we're fighting to get one here.
Fighting hard.
Well, because in North Richmond alone, and this is not a big area, it's quite small, I think it was something like 34 or 38 people just last year died from overdoses. And it just boggles the mind that we're waiting for this. We're letting people die.
Exactly.
When there's a solution, tried and true, proven.
With evidence.
Evidence backing it up, and it's been there for 30 years.
And it works. Exactly. 30 years. Exactly. But just next question was about barriers. Like, why do you think there are barriers? And John, you might be able to kind of make a comment on that as to why it is so slow for us to move in that direction. We've seen it work in other countries. What's going on, Australia?
I'd be interested to get yours, because hearing that the UK has deaths when the Netherlands doesn't, my theory is not so much, here's a quick little solution to it, but I think it's far more endemic, systemic, and based in cultural norms, because you had Victorian England way back when just developing this idea of what's right and what's wrong, what's proper, what's not. So it's like you look at the UK, you look at the US, you look at Australia, places that have this English colonial heritage, and it might manifest in different ways in each jurisdiction, but at the same time you have the same general attitude of that's wrong, that's bad, don't do it, rather than the same realistic attitude that the Netherlands and other European countries have that says, all right, it's going to happen. How do we make sure it happens responsibly and, that people don't die from it, that these horrible things don't happen as a result of it? So, I wish I could say it was something where it's just like, that's the issue. We go in, we fix it. It is something we will constantly be struggling with because it is just so ingrained in our culture.
I think one of the biggest ones is slowly educating people, isn't it? It's a lack of knowledge and ignorance, really, that causes the stigmatization and fear that we need to...
Because while we were sitting here talking, I remembered this. I remembered during the AIDS 2014 conference, they did a special episode of Q&A on ABC, and they had this health minister from Indonesia, which obviously a very conservative country. And somebody asked the question of this health minister, well, how do you talk to people? How do you get over these kind of religious concerns? And the response she gave was just brilliant. She said it calmly, and she said this, and she contextualized it. And I'm going to quote her here a little bit.
Please do.
She says, talking about the scope of the problem in Indonesia, talking about the people who are, struggling with drug use and who are now HIV positive, Hep C positive, she says, what do we want to do? Do we want to kill them, or do we want to save them? Because the easiest way is to kill them. And mind, she's saying this to a room full of police officers and law enforcement officials. And then she said, because if you don't do anything, we keep on fighting among us, they will die. They will die of overdose, they will die of AIDS, they will die of Hep C. And if they get in prison, they will die even faster because they get beaten up. But we are the government. Where were we when our kids became victims of the drug pushers? And there was total silence. She took this problem that seemed all about morality and right and wrong, and just said, no. This is the lives and health of our children at stake. And I say children loosely. I'm not talking about toddlers. I'm talking about everybody as a child.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to keep in mind. And as we educate people, like, keep the focus on that and let them know that that's what's important in this issue.
Continuing having those conversations. And we have been faffing along. Goodness me. Can't stop talking, can we? When it comes to drugs, we'll be right back, guys. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
For over 25 years, the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives have been collecting and preserving Australia's queer history. A not-for-profit organisation, the Archives rely on your support through membership, financial and queer memorabilia donations. To find out more, email algarchives@hotmail.com or web search the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives. Joy,
joy, joy. But we were talking over the break and you said that there's something that's really, really important to teach people about, and we call them the 10 pillars of partying. I have never heard
of
these.
I kind of made that up just for our notes. Okay. I know they're called 10 pillars, but I just called it the 10 pillars of partying. But I feel like it's quite appropriate.
It's
right?
An easy way to remember. Yeah. Could you just go into detail? Tell us what these 10
absolutely.
Pillars are.
So this was an idea initiated in the Netherlands, but we applied that here on other festivals as well. For Rainbow Serpent, for instance. So we have made 10 pillars, and those are, I'll just mention them because they're very practical advice that you can apply when you go to events.
Definitely.
So the first one is be prepared. So see how you feel. Be aware of set, drug, and setting. Mm. So set and drug and setting stands for, the set is your mindset, but these days we also talk about all factors within yourself. So what's your mood? Are you well fed? Are you well hydrated? Mm. Do you feel positive? Are you looking forward to the experience? Setting is, what setting are you using the drug in? So all factors that can influence you as
like
a being.
Like if you're in the sun and it's really hot.
Exactly.
Or if you're in the water. Mm.
Are you with people that you're familiar with? Are they good friends? Do you feel safe? And the drug is the drug itself. And these are the three key factors that contribute to a person's well-being. So it's good to be aware of that. Second is be responsible. So drug use is never without risk. And you can try to test your drugs with reagent kits. These are very limited tests, though, so they only give an indication of what might be in the substance.
Yeah.
But that does mean that if you test on, for instance, MDMA, and it turns out green instead of purple, black, that is not the result you might expect. So therefore, it's highly likely it doesn't have any MDMA in it.
And do you guys actually provide these at the events?
No, we don't, but you can buy them at many stores throughout Melbourne or other cities, and some events do sell them on location. Mm. And very important, do your research. If you choose to use drugs, do your research on the effects, about the risks, about combination, also if you use medication.
Mm.
Third is drink enough but not too much. So that means 1 up to 2 glasses of non-alcoholic fluid per hour. This is also to prevent water intoxication, which is a risk related to MDMA use.
Have you actually ever seen that before? Because I remember people kind of talking about that, like, you know, stay hydrated, but don't drown yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've actually...
Yeah, like if you look at MDMA specifically, water intoxication is a serious risk, as well as overheating, so hyperthermia. So... fourth pillar is eat something every few hours. Also has to do with water intoxication, to not only nourish your body from what is lost, but also to get electrolytes into your body.
Yep.
Cool down and chill out to prevent hyperthermia. Apply self-care, so sleep enough. Very important if you use stimulants, also when using ice. A lot of these negative effects are related to not sleeping. Medical team is your friend, so always search for help, specifically when someone's unconscious. Always ask for help. Practice and promote safe sex and consent. Love your ears, so wear earplugs, because you only have one set of ears.
Absolutely.
And you want to do that with
the
rest of your life.
Always wear earplugs.
And the last pillar is don't drive impaired.
That's great. Is this posted on the DanceWise website or the harm reduction website?
No. At the moment, you can only find them on the website of Rainbow Serpent Festival.
Okay, yeah. Cool. But
because we made it for them, but they can be applied at many. So I'm happy to give you an if you click me an email once again. Absolutely. I'm happy to send them.
Yeah,
to you.
I think that'll be good, especially because we've got Mardi Gras coming up this weekend. I know a lot of the community might be going to Pashiata. There's also Chill Out on the weekend, so we probably might try post those pillars up soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Just so you guys can keep it in mind. There is one question that I do want to put in there, and that is, if a patron is caught with possessing illegal substances, what could they do in that instance, and what rights have they got?
Okay, so if you get caught by the police, that is, you may be offered a caution or diversion, and you can also be issued a charge and summons sheet on the spot, or be arrested and charged. So drug offenses that are charged under the DPCSA Act from 1981 include use, also possession, but use is quite a broad concept. Could also be saying that you've used something. So this is one of the most common ways to get charged. Cultivation, other things, being drunk in public and such. So if you are in a situation that you are caught, you have certain rights. So first thing to do, we would advise you to remember the four R's. And the first is to remain calm. The second is to write to make no comment interview. So that means you don't have to provide any information. We do strongly advise you, because you must provide it, is your name, address, and date of birth. Those are the three things. The rest you don't have to say anything about. You don't have to say that you've used anything or that you possess anything, that it's a drug. You can record the police, so it's legal to film the police. And the last one is report it. So take your own notes, write down the officer's ID number, and if you have a complaint, you can do that online on Victoria's Police Ethics and Standards, and some other options.
Yeah, that's great. That's
awesome.
Great. Thank you.
Well, we have literally been chatting right up to the hour, and we pretty much have to wrap up now, don't we, John?
Yes, sadly. But before we go, we want to let you know about some events coming up at Chill Out in a couple of weeks. So if you've come back from Mardi Gras and you still want more, Friday the 10th of March, we've got a lavish lunch, which is a fundraiser at Chill Out. It's wonderful. It should go to some great causes. There's going to be an auction there, I believe, for some good stuff happening. So that's at noon on Friday the 10th of March at the Belvedere Social. We also have the Baywatch Pool Party on Saturday the 11th of March, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., raising funds for, I want to say it's for VAC, but I can't remember. There's going to be some fun games.
It'll be
and
fun.
All that.
And the porn stars Dirk Caber and Jesse Jackman will be there. Yes. So surely you'd want to go check it out.
Lusty. No, it should be pretty good. So if you want more details on that, best check out the Chill Out website, or you can visit VAC's website at vac.org.au, and there will be plenty more information there.
Absolutely, and it has come to the end of the show. We didn't even play any of the songs, just been laughing on, haven't we? But thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much, Marla, for coming in.
Yes,
my
pleasure.
You've been an absolutely amazing guest. Those of you who are going to Mardi Gras or Chill Out, please do take care, and don't forget to take your meds, and also remember, look out for each other and take care of one another, because, you know, how good are good friends?
Sweet.
This is Jesse and my co-host John. Hi. You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Well, well, well.
Well, 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 bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.